the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm Chris Prytower. Today, we're going to return to a favorite topic for many of our listeners, which is creating a predictable stream of income during retirement. Now that you're no longer working with a weekly paycheck, the most important part of your finances is having a predictable source of income to live off of during your golden years. But in today's low interest rate environment and with a volatile stock market, finding predictable sources of income is getting harder to find. So what do most retirees do to solve this problem? Not to mention keeping up with inflation, since most couples on average will spend at least 25 years in retirement. So just imagine what your expenses are now and what they could grow to be 20 years from now. I can't think of too many things I buy today that are cheaper today than they were 20 years ago, other than maybe my TV and DVD player.
You know, Chris, there's typically, I'm glad you mentioned about the only thing that's going down is technology, unless you're buying a smartphone. But, you know, I think most of us, if we take a look at our checkbooks, what we spent on food 10 years ago, what we spent on utilities, our taxes, our insurance premiums, all of those things have gone up. But we live in an environment where things are no longer predictable as they once were. The interest rates are no longer as high as they were, let's say, going back 10, 15 years ago. But typically, when you're looking at retirement, there's five sources of creating income during your retirement years. Unfortunately, Chris, not all of them are predictable.
Well, Jim, let's talk about those sources. And since you mentioned that they're not all predictable, which ones would you say are?
Well, if you take most individuals, the typical sources of income that most retirees are going to rely on when they retire are, number one, their personal savings and home equity, Social Security, which is probably the most predictable. Employer pension plans can be predictable or not predictable. I mean, if you work for the government, let's say a state, local, or federal government, you still are under what we call defined benefit pension plans, where they give you a predictable source of income based on your salary when you're working. But if you go over to the private sector, most of those defined benefit plans went away over the last three or four decades. So it's, you know, they've been replaced by 401k programs. And whatever that 401k grows to and whatever you can earn on it, that's your income. And that isn't always predictable. Another area is what we call post-retirement employment. And that is becoming increasingly popular since they changed the rules going back into the year 2000. It used to be, Chris, if you started between ages 62 and 65, if you made so much income, they would phase out your Social Security income. And then at age 65 to 70, they would phase out part of your Social Security income if you had earned income, but it wouldn't be as much. And then after age 70, you could basically work and they wouldn't penalize you. Well, they got rid of that in the year 2000. So if you wait to a full retirement age, which is for most people today, boomers, it's going to be between 66 and 67, you can work as much as you like, earn as much as you like, and you're not going to get penalized. So post-retirement employment is becoming a popular option. And then, of course, the other option, which happens in many cases, is inherited wealth. So of the five I just mentioned, one of them is predictable, which is Social Security. Employer pension plans, as I talked about, used to be predictable back in the days when they were defined benefit plans, but most corporations simply couldn't sustain the funding of those plans, and it is an issue if you are working for the federal government, the state, or a municipality. It is an issue you may be facing in the next decade. Several municipalities have had to cut back on their pension promises because in order to stay solvent. I know my own state of California, our governor here said that this is going to be a major issue in the next downturn because the state is so dependent on millionaires for their income taxes and also capital gains. So that is one issue that is going to become increasingly not just for the private sector as it is now, but it's coming to the public sector in the next decade. But one thing I want to point out is that you will see these plans that you have now, maybe they work out some compromise where those who are under existing plans, I know several cities now, and even some of the large blue chip companies that once had defined benefit pension plans kept those for those employees that were near retirement that they had made that promise to. But new employees coming into the system are now under plans like 401ks. And Chris, I can see that coming to the government sector in the next decade, where maybe they keep their defined benefit promises to some of the existing workers who are in retirement. But new workers coming into the system will be on 401k plans, or in this case, 457 plans with the government, just like 401k plans in the private sector.
Well, and Jim, why don't we start with the most predictable source of income, which is Social Security? And I hear a lot about Social Security in the news, even in our office. And I know our advisors are preparing clients to maximize their Social Security benefit, but for the benefit of our listeners, let's get a little bit more into it on the show today.
Okay. For most of our listeners in the private sector, this is probably the most reliable source of income because it comes from the government. It's a promise they make you, and during your working years, you can check at the Social Security site, and they'll tell you exactly, based on your income credits paid in, what you're going to have at age 62, your full retirement age, and at age 70. But here, there are a lot of strategies that you need to explore that can maximize your Social Security in retirement, because it can be structured. The best way is to delay taking your Social Security for as long as you can, and hopefully to age 70. And the reason I say that, your income benefits will increase by a guaranteed 8% a year. So let's say your full retirement age is 66. Instead of taking your full benefits at age 66, if you wait four more years, the government guarantees they will increase your check 8% a year, or by another 32%. Now, let me tell you why that's important. Not only will your monthly income be higher, but also your surviving spouse, her benefit is going to be larger, because when one spouse passes away, and 85% of Social Security survivors are women. So women are more likely to outlast their husbands. So the higher the husband's Social Security, when he passes on, the wife will have the choice of taking his Social Security instead of her own, because she will lose, when one spouse passes away, you're going to lose one Social Security check. So along goes away a source of predictable income, in this case, the wife's. So the higher the husband's Social Security benefit, the better off the wife is going to be. And remember, as always, and this is something that can come as a rude shock to many retired couples. You're getting, let's say, a husband and wife. Let's say the husband is getting, I don't know, let's pick a number. Let's just say $28,000 or $26,000. The wife gets half of that. So, or her own, whichever is larger. But let's say it's half of that. So you get $26,000. The wife's half is half of that, $13,000. So that is basically $39,000 a year. Husband passes away, the wife has two choices now. She can take hers, obviously. The husband's was larger, so she will take her husband's at $26,000 a year, and she will forfeit her own at $13,000. So the higher the husband's Social Security benefit, the better off the surviving spouse is going to be. So, and that's one thing that we're going to see, Chris, is that more and more, you're going to see a lot of these. Social Security will probably be one of the last few sources of pension predictable income that individuals can rely on.
Well, let's move on to the next source, which is personal savings and home equity. I know over the last few years, reverse mortgages have become quite popular with couples or individuals who want to be able to stay in their homes and really maybe also free up some cash.
Well, this becomes a great source of not only reducing expenses, but also increasing the size of your portfolio to create additional income. I mean, if you look at part of your savings or home equity, is where you want to maintain some flexibility for future tax planning, as pension plans and Social Security are pretty much straightforward. They're taxable. Anything you pull out of your pension plan is 100% taxable, and your Social Security benefits, up to 85% of that could be taxable. So you want to maintain some flexibility, especially as you get older and you're required to take more and more income each year out of your retirement plans, like let's say your IRA. So what we want to see here, and we're seeing this with clients outside of California, is usually when couples or individuals retire, they downsize their homes. They move to, let's say, another state, another city, where the cost of housing is cheaper, or they may stay in the same state, but maybe they move to another locale, they buy a smaller home, they pay cash for it, so there's no mortgage, and they may have some enough equity, especially if you live in California here, which our definition of a millionaire here is a homeowner. And so some of their home equity is freed up for investments. And this is probably the most effective and typical tool we use in planning for retirement. The big home is no longer needed. The kids are all grown up now. They're out of the house. They're on their own. So the big house is no longer needed. And this is a chance to tap into some of that equity, especially if you bought a house, you stayed in that house for 10, 15, 20 years, there's been substantial appreciation, your mortgage is paid down. The other strategy we often see is clients, Chris, are choosing to move out of high-cost states like our own here in California, and they're moving to either low-tax states or no-tax states, and where the cost of living is cheaper. Three of the popular destinations that we've seen clients, our own clients that lived and worked here and left the state, they've gone to Arizona, where they have low income taxes, low cost of living, Nevada, where the cost of living is cheaper, they have no state income taxes, or Texas, where they have no state taxes. So almost 10% of the retirees leaving the state of California are going to Texas, where there are no taxes, or Nevada. Both states have no state income taxes. Can you imagine just eliminating one extra tax return? And it's not just the taxes, as we've covered on the show before. It's housing and the cost of living, which could be, I think we did a show on this just a couple weeks ago, can be as much as 35 to 40 to 45% cheaper if you're living in a high tax state like New York, New Jersey, California. So the other thing that happens sometimes, you get people that say, you know what, I live here, the house is paid for, I don't want to move it. This is where, you know, I'm close to my kids, our friends are here. And a lot of times, Chris, in cases where there isn't enough income, you go to a reverse mortgage. And that's a whole show in itself, which we'll probably do in the future.
Well, and it really is a completely different topic, an important one. But with us focusing on predictable income on this show, Jim, assuming someone downsizes their home, they move to a cheaper city or state, they free up some equity, what can they do with that equity to create predictable income?
There are probably only three alternatives here that we like. Number one is annuities, where you get a monthly check, monthly income, and the insurance company guarantees it. The old defined benefit pension plans that were in existence in corporations and those that are in the public sector, that's what you're getting. Basically, the state or the municipality is put money aside for you, and you've contributed some money as well. And they'll take that money and they'll go to an insurance company saying, based on your life, the age of your spouse, what will you give them for the rest of their life? You can create annuities out of your pension plan. So annuities is predictable. We like individual bonds, and the reason we like them is they're predictable, they're reliable. And the other area that we like that's somewhat less predictable is blue chip dividend aristocratic stocks. These are stocks that have a history of paying dividends every single year and raising those dividends every single year over a 25-year period. Now, let me talk about bonds. The one reason we like individual bonds is we know exactly what your income is going to be. You know exactly what your principal will be when the bond matures, when you get your money back. And that's the thing. If I buy, let's say I put $100,000 in a bond and it pays me 4%, I know exactly what my income is going to be. It's going to be 4% a year. And let's say I buy a 10-year bond. I will get, on $100,000, I will get $4,000 every single year. It will not change. It will never change. And at the end of 10 years, I get my money back. Now, the next area to individual bonds is we like immediate annuities, in which case you are creating the equivalent of your own defined benefit pension plan, which will be predictable, it'll be reliable income. And here's the best part, and this is really key when you talk about longevity today. You can never outlive it. If you live to be 100 years old and an insurance company said they're paying you $2,000 a month, they have to pay that $2,000 a month to you for as long as you live, or in the case if you choose payments to both you and your spouse, as long as either one of you live. So you can't outlive it. So those are two sources of reliable and predictable income when it comes to, let's say, Social Security, that creates a sort of comforting sense outside of, let's say, the volatile investment markets. Now, the other area of income that's somewhat predictable is blue chip dividend paying stocks. These are companies, when I say blue chip aristocrats, there's a term called dividend aristocrats, and it refers to any company that has paid a dividend and raised that dividend every single year for 25 years. Now, why am I saying that may not be less predictable? Let's go back to the financial crisis in 2008, and many banks got themselves in financial trouble. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, a lot of these companies under financial duress eliminated their dividends. They did not eliminate it if they were solvent. They did not eliminate their bond payments, but the dividends were the first to go. So that's why I'm saying maybe a little bit less predictable. You have companies that will sometimes get themselves in financial trouble, like General Electric, which was one of the original Dow stocks. It got eliminated from the Dow. They got into financial difficulties, and they reduced, and eventually they'll eliminate the dividends. What you have now is something you also are going to need in retirement, and that's an inflation hedge. How would you like to have a check that every single year? I can think of several dividend aristocrats. Most of these companies are in the Dow. You have some in the S&P, but companies that have been paying dividends for over 50 years, a lot of those Dow aristocrats have been increasing those dividends every single year for the last 25 years. So every single year, instead of declining income, you've got increasing income. And as I mentioned, several of these companies have been doing this for 50 in 60 years.
And for our listeners, if you'd like to hear more about annuities, we just spoke with Mike Robinson on our program going through the basics and how they fit into your portfolio. And you can find that on the Financial Sense NewsHour page. Now, Jim, I wanted to ask, what about bond funds or bond ETFs, which have become so popular this last decade?
You know, they have become probably it's a large segment of the investment public have gone into these programs, and we've talked about the risk associated with them. But Chris, they are less reliable, and the income you receive from the funds can change almost on a monthly basis. Think of all those investors that put their money in bond funds or bond ETFs this last decade, only to see their dividends drop as much as 40%. As the Fed brought interest rates down to the lowest point in human history. So during one of the longest running bull markets in history, where the markets were going up every year, a lot of individuals in these bond funds were experiencing a drop in income as the Fed's QE program drove down rates to the lowest we've seen. Literally, this is something, Chris, I'd never thought I would see in my lifetime, but the lowest in 5,000 years that we've been recording interest rates, going all the way back to Sumerian times. So you also have a liquidity problem in bond funds in the next downturn. Most bond funds own illiquid bonds. And what that means, it would be hard to liquidate in a downturn. The most popular issued bond over the last 5 years are bonds that are rated triple B, which is just one notch above a junk bond. So imagine what happens to that bond rating if we go into, let's say, a recession. When the economy declines, sales go down, profits go down for companies. So there's a lot more interest in risk. The thing I like about an individual bond, I can control the type of quality of bond I have. I have predictable income. It's not going to change. And I also know that when it comes due, exactly what it's going to be worth. You cannot say that about a bond fund or a bond ETF. If you have invested in LQD, which is the ETF for corporate bonds, or TLT, which is the ETF for treasury bonds, over the last couple of years, your principal's down. You are down right now. Now, if I buy a 5-year bond or a 10-year bond, it may fluctuate a little bit if interest rates go up, but every single year the maturity on that bond gets shorter, and more importantly, I know exactly what I'm going to get when that bond matures. If I put $100,000 in, I'm going to get $100,000. You cannot say that about a bond fund. If you put $100,000 in a bond fund, likely in the last couple of years, you're probably down on your principal right now.
Well, let's move on to another source of income, which is becoming more and more popular, and it may or may not be as predictable depending on the job, which is post-retirement employment.
You know, this is a very good strategy for producing reliable income because it also enables other income-enhancing strategies. For example, an individual retires and maybe they take a part-time job that doesn't pay as much as their salary, but it might enable them to postpone taking their Social Security, allowing their Social Security to grow by 8% a year to age 70. So a lot of our clients will work part-time, and what we'll do to put them in a better financial position is we will have them delay taking their Social Security benefits. That's going to create a larger check by 32% larger at age 70, but also a larger check for their surviving spouse. And we had a client. He's still with us. This is the third generation. I began working with this client. He's a doctor. He's retired now. I first began working with his father. We put together his father's financial plan, estate plan. Then his father referred me to his son, and now I'm working with the children. And his goal was to retire at age 65, and he wanted a certain level of income and a certain amount of assets. We achieved that goal. But he said, you know what? I can't see myself. His hobbies are, he likes photography. He likes travel. He's part of a sports car club. He said, I don't want to do that all the time. So what he did is, number one, he postponed his Social Security to age 70. And his wife took half of his. That was back in the days when you could do file and suspend. Now, they have changed that. They changed that a couple of years ago. But anyway, he postponed taking his Social Security age 70. And it did two things. Number one, his Social Security check is larger. So he's getting more income today. It will be larger because that will allow his wife to take his Social Security if he predeceases her. The second thing it did, it brought in extra income and allowed them to do some of the most expensive trips they were able to afford in terms of travel. He's got one daughter that's married to an individual who works for an oil company stationed overseas. So they've gone to China, they've gone to Australia, they've done a lot of expensive trips they were able to do because he was bringing in enough money as a part-time employee. And the other thing it did, it allowed his savings to accumulate. He never needed to touch them. So his savings grew by almost a third. So part-time employment, we are seeing this, Chris, more and more because people are healthier. And quite honestly, in many cases, it's the only option to bridge the gap between retiring early with having enough money to live the retirement lifestyle they want to.
Now, I should also mention here for our listeners that if post-retirement income is a topic of interest, you can listen to our episode from July 9th, where we go into quite a bit of detail about the gig economy. Again, that's the July 9th episode. Now, the final source of income, which is one we really wish we all had, is having a rich uncle or a Daddy Warbucks, which, of course, is an inheritance.
I mean, obviously, this is something we often see happen. An elderly parent passes on, and there's an inheritance that in some cases can make a world of difference to an individual or a couple's retirement. Now, obviously, a large inheritance or even some form of inheritance can change a person's circumstances. These are extra funds that come into the picture and change retirement. But even when there is a possible inheritance, one should never plan on this happening. A couple things can happen. Parents, number one, can live much longer than you think. I mean, how many gosh, I'm trying to think, the number of clients that we have that are in their 90s. So even when there's a possible inheritance, you should never plan on this happening. As I mentioned, they can live longer. And also consider the cost of long-term care as you get into your late 80s and 90s. A lot of those assets can be consumed in taking care of, paying for a long-term care facility, which in California can run from anywhere from $6,500 to almost $8,500 a month. But consider an inheritance as a bonus, but no plan should ever be based on, well, we're basing our plan that we're going to inherit money, because you don't know how long your parents are going to live. You're better looking at a possible inheritance as, let's say, an alternative. Okay, that's a backup plan. If that happens, well, we're going to be able to do certain things that we can't do now. And maybe you think about how it might change not only your income, but in many cases, what it might do to your estate taxes. Don't base your retirement plan on this happening. In other words, you don't want to sit there and say, well, we haven't really saved much. We're not really doing much on the planning side, but my parents have a lot of money, and that's what we're counting on. Well, that may surprise you. They may live much longer, or those assets may be consumed with medical costs.
Yeah, you really want to make sure there is a backup plan, and that's why I'm glad we're covering these different options. But Jim, if we were to sum things up in terms of finding predictable income during retirement, it's really based on four predictable factors, and the first of those is Social Security. Number two, though, is individual bonds, as the income and maturity on those bonds is reliable. And then number three, turning assets into a private pension plan with an annuity. And then finally, number four, part-time employment that produces monthly income. So you do have options that you can use to provide a secure source of monthly income outside of Social Security. And there are additional ways to enhance your Social Security benefits. Also, don't forget that you can turn assets into reliable income, whether it's individual bonds or a monthly annuity. Now, Jim, it is time for our real life case study, and it is a hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. Of course, names and circumstances have been changed to protect privacy, and we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which do illustrate the points that are being made here today.
All right. This case is Tim and Jane, and let's give you a little background. Tim is age 66, Jane 64. Tim is a project manager, and Jane is a secretary. Tim built a very successful consulting business, but has had some recent health concerns. Meanwhile, Jane managed the household finances over the years and wants to give up that responsibility when they retire. So they came to us saying, you know, what does retirement look like? Can we afford to retire and live well as we are doing now? Now, here were some of the key things that were important to each of them. Having a reliable source of income in retirement. And I stress the word reliable because there's, as we just talked about, there's fewer and fewer sources that are dependable today and reliable. Being able to retire soon because of health issues, and managing, as anyone is concerned about as you age, medical costs, because as many of you know, Medicare has gone to a four-tiered pricing system based on your income, and Medicare is covering less, which means your Medigap insurance premiums are also going up. What was important to Jane? Reducing the risk in the portfolio, not outliving their assets, and as anybody would like to do through their retirement years, you don't want to say, okay, I worked all my life and I've lived this lifestyle. Now I head into retirement. I've got to cut back on everything. I can't go out to dinner like I used to. We can't take vacations. So you want to maintain your lifestyle and keep that the same and hopefully keep it the same throughout those retirement years. Tim and Jane were fairly conservative on a risk score of 1 to 100. They were a 30. Their portfolio was a little bit on the riskier side on 45, but pretty much in line with who they were as risk takers. Now, their current budget income was $210,000, expenses $112,000. They had a surplus of almost $100,000 a year. They were living well within their means. At retirement, they estimated that their income would be $60,000, their expenses would be $110,000. So we had a $50,000 shortfall to meet their lifestyle and keep it at a pace that was something they both wanted to enjoy. Here's what we looked at. real estate, their house, $680,000. Unfortunately, liabilities of $380,000. So they only had about $300,000 of equity. However, because they were savers, their portfolio was $2.7 million. If we look at their portfolio, 25% was in cash, 30% in stocks, and 45% in bond funds. Here's what they wanted. They wanted predictable income, and as we just talked about, one of the problems you have with bond funds, they've seen the dividends and the income from those bond funds go down over the years as interest rates came down. I mean, if you think about it, in the year 2016, a 10-year treasury note got down to 1.3%. So you imagine if you were in a bond fund, what happened to your dividends? They wanted to manage the emotions and investor biases. They would get caught up on fear, obviously, as many people did in 2008 and 2009 during the crisis. And sometimes, like now, whether it's cannabis stocks or Bitcoin or the FANG stocks, you get excited about these stocks that are going up 40, 50% a year, or a cannabis stock that goes up tenfold in a single month. So they were aware that sometimes they had the worst decisions they made on the investment front were decisions they made emotionally. What we did is we created a balanced account. We got rid of the bond funds and we put them in individual bonds and we put them in interest rate floating bonds, meaning that every time the Fed raises interest rates, as it did in the month of September for the third time this year, and we expect another one coming in December, the income from these bonds goes up. So they had a predictable source of income, and then we also did some blue chip stocks, and that would produce roughly about $35,000 of income. We still could not bridge the gap or the shortfall needed. So what we wanted to do was reduce the exposure to some of the high beta stocks, especially some of the FANG stocks. And what we did is a fixed index annuity that can act as a bond proxy. And that way we were replacing something that was unpredictable and making it predictable with some upside. We invested $500,000 into annuity to produce a stable income and reduce any market risk, especially considering retiring in the next year or two. The other thing is it allowed them with Social Security to have a good portion or a majority of their income that was reliable and predictable. And that was what gave them the peace of mind that they could go ahead and retire in the next couple of years.
Now, for our newer Lifetime Income listeners, do keep in mind that every Monday and Tuesday, we cover some of the common issues affecting most of our listeners, from retirement to travel to the kinds of things that impact your health and ultimately your quality of life. I've already mentioned two previous episodes on this edition of Lifetime Income, but you can go to financialsense.com to hear all of our programs.
In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.